happy July 4th today, everyone. Anybody get to experience fireworks last night on July 3rd like I did? No? Yeah, you did. Yeah, we did as well. They were going. So I'm expecting this might be the third or fourth night in a row we get to experience that in our neighborhood. It's going to be fun. I'm grateful to live in a country that we get to gather together in freedom and not feel any sense of persecution that we can't be here and that we have to worry about the government coming in and taking away our ability to meet or blowing up our churches like is happening all over the world right now. God's been gracious to allow us to be here doing this today, and I don't want to take it for granted. I've been looking forward to getting back into 2 Corinthians and learning from chapter 8 and 9. And we've talked about this last week. We're doing a new series now as a setup to what we're going to talk about in 2 Corinthians chapter 8 and 9. And we want to just give a biblical view of money and giving. And so with that in mind, I'm excited to continue our new series, Generous, What God Says About Money Today. And we'll be in various places of Scripture. Mainly, though, 1 Timothy chapter 6. So you can turn there. And the message today is entitled, When Money is Your Master. When Money is Your Master. There's a temptation and often a tendency for so many of us to blame shift when we're confronted with our sin. So we don't want to own up to it ourselves. We want to kind of find a scapegoat, right? Find somebody else to blame. Got in a fight with my friend in the neighborhood. Well, the problem is having friends. I'm just not going to have friends anymore. I won't be put in these situations where I want to fight them, right? So the problem's not you and yourself. The problem is having friends. So you get rid of them. Getting a lot of arguments with family members at family reunions and holiday gatherings. What's the answer? Gotta stop going to those things, right? I'm not showing up on holidays anymore. I'm not showing up on reunions because then I can avoid quarreling with people. That's the best way. Get mad when I drive in traffic on 280. Answer? Don't go to 280 anymore, right? That's the answer. Don't go near that place because that's the place where frustration is waiting for you, right? It's the answer. People have the same tendency when it comes to money to kind of blame money for all the problems of the world. I remember it was the same for me as a kid. I would ask my mommy and daddy, hey, mommy and daddy, I really want that toy. Answer, sorry, son, we don't have money for that. What about that bike? If we don't have money for the toy, we definitely don't have money for the bike, son. So you're going to have to wait because it costs way more. Okay, can we just go out to eat to McDonald's for lunch? Nope. Eating at home, need to save money. Can we ever have any fun? Nope, son, fun costs money. We don't have that to spare right now, right? And I remember that was our life often growing up because my parents were trying to be good stewards of the money God had given them, and we just didn't have excess all the time. We had just enough because God provided, and we had to learn to be content. Well, as a kid, when you don't understand how things work, sometimes you can tend to want to blame the problem on other things, right? Well, I know what the problem is. I remember thinking this as a little kid. The problem is money. What if we just do away with all the money? We just get rid of money. Then everybody could have everything they want whenever they want it, right? There's no money. You don't have to come up with money. People just make stuff, right? And then they give it to people and everybody can be generous and help each other. And I remember my parents at one point said, son, that would be nice, but that's not the way the world works. That'll never happen. You don't understand. You'll understand one day. Okay, and that sounds silly, but it's not just the kids that are thinking this way. In 2020, the World Economic Forum actually is walking towards this approach with their 2030 predictions video. Any of you guys seen this video? Pretty crazy, pretty creepy. It's called the Great Reset that they're hoping to usher in soon. And the number one premise on it is, in 2030, you'll own nothing and be happy. That's the number one. You'll own nothing and be happy. Number two, you'll rent everything and it'll be delivered to you by drones. That'd be kind of crazy. You'll eat way less meat. Why? Because it will make you more healthy and it'll be good for the environment. And number four, Western values, democracy, freedom, free trade. I added those because those are Western values. Will be tested to the breaking point U.S. will no longer be the world's main superpower. So, problems with poverty? Easy, easy. We redistribute the wealth to everyone. So nobody has more than the next person. We just give everybody equal amount. And poverty solved, we'll solve it in 2030 and thereafter. It'd be cool. If you don't have any money or own anything, if someone else, the government of the world, makes sure that it's distributed evenly, it'll fix all the problems in the world. Everyone will not lack anything. Everyone will be happy and be protected from sadness. Sound realistic to you guys? I don't think it sounds. It doesn't to me. And by skimming through the Bible, you may get that idea too if you're not too discerning. The Bible has a lot of negative things to say about those who seek to be rich and acquire wealth. And so you could come away with the conclusion that the problem's money. Money is inherently evil and it's wrong and you should never want it. Okay? Fixing all man's problems means that, like, we inherently have to take a vow of poverty. Don't own anything. Don't have any possessions. Just give everything away, you know, and then you're going to be good to go. Right? Like, that's what God's advocating. That's what Jesus did, right? He was a homeless man, didn't have a place to lay his head, didn't have a home. Surely that's the answer. Becoming impoverished and not having anything will protect you from all the sin and the problems of the world. But honestly, it's the opposite of that, if you really read it, like, the way that God intended. We learned last week that, number one, God is the owner of everything, including money. Bible's super clear about that. All the money belongs to God. Haggai 2:8, the silver is mine, the gold is mine, declared the Lord. Money was his idea. Money was his way of allowing people to prosper for their good and for their hard work and to provide for mankind. It was God's idea, and all of it's his, and he owns it all, and he distributes it as he pleases. He's in control, he's sovereign, he's over it all. Deuteronomy 8:18 says, you remember the Lord your God, for he's the one who gives you the power to get wealth. He gives the power. He gives you the strength. He orchestrates the circumstances of your life, gives you the talent and the know-how and the propensity to do the things that we do. He doesn't say he gives you the power to get wealth, but that's terrible. Don't use your power to get it. He does not say that. He says he actually enables you to do it. But he brings you to a test, because his role he gives you, number two, is to entrust us to be stewards of everything, including money, for his glory. Okay? So he gives us everything, he owns everything, and he gives us the power to earn and acquire so that we can steward these things that are his for his honor and his glory. His glory, meaning we're reflecting his nature and his character to the world through the way that we use what he gives, okay? So we've been called to be stewards, managers of his things, of his possessions, including money. Everything that we have is not ours. Our homes aren't actually ours. They're God's homes. Our cars aren't actually ours. They're God's cars to be used for his glory, right? Like, our time is not our own. It's been given to us to steward for his glory, because everything's about him. Money, we learned last week, is a neutral tool that God gives us to steward in order to reveal what we love most. Okay, it's just a neutral tool. So money's not inherently evil, it's just neutral. And it's a tool, it's a circumstance, it's a trial that God gives us as stewards and managers to reveal what's really inside of our hearts, what we really love, and who we love, right? We know that we were created, Matthew 22:37, to love the Lord your God with all of your heart and your soul and with all of your mind. This is the first greatest commandment. And to love others as ourselves. And so that's the greatest. How do we encapsulate everything that the Old Testament and the New Testament has to say for us of God's requirement for us? And it's that we would love God with all of us, everything about us, right? And money is the tool God uses to reveal whether or not we'll actually live that out, right? Luke 16:10-13. We talked about this last week as we begin to transition into this week. One who's faithful with a very little is also faithful in much. And one who is dishonest in a very little is also dishonest and much. If then you have not been faithful with the unrighteous wealth, who will entrust you with true riches? If you've not been faithful in that which is another's, God's, with God's stuff, who will give you that which is your own? No servant can serve two masters, for either will hate one and love the other, or he will be devoted to one and despise the other. You can't serve God and money. And so what he's painting in this picture is you've been given your wealth. We've been given our wealth and our money and our possessions and everything from God. It's God's stuff. He said, here it is. Manage it well while you're here on this earth. Use it for my glory. Invest it in the kingdom. If you do it well, you'll be given true riches. If you don't, you won't be given anything. If you can't manage something that's not yours, why would I give you something that can be yours forever? God says, right? And he says, I want to know who your true master is. Because you'll either hate one and love the other. You can't serve two. You got to pick. You got to pick your allegiance. And that's what this life is all about. Who are you going to be allegiant to? Who is it? Who's the one? Who's your Lord? Truly, truly, money's going to reveal it. Money's going to reveal it. Because you'll either love money and it'll be your master and you'll love it and you'll pursue it, or you'll pursue God. So money's a neutral tool God gives us to steward in order to reveal which master we truly love, God or money. It's not money itself that's condemned. It's the love of money as your master that's condemned. And so 1 Timothy 6 talks a lot about this. I want to read starting in verse 2. It begins with talking about false teachers, but get the flavor here. These false teachers have a deep down motive, financial gain, and it leads them to do all the things that is talked against here at the beginning. It starts there, and then it'll get to this idea of loving money. It says this, teach and urge these things. If anyone teaches a different doctrine and does not agree with the sound words of our Lord Jesus Christ and the teaching that accords with godliness, he is puffed up with conceit and understands nothing. He has an unhealthy craving for controversy and for quarrels about words, which produce envy, dissension, slander, evil suspicions, and constant friction among people who are depraved in mind and depraved of the truth. Imagining, listen to this, that godliness is a means of financial gain. Verse 6, but godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world, and we cannot take anything out of the world. If we have food and clothing, with these we will be content. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmless desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. For the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. It is through this craving that some have wandered away from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. Okay? So we're going to have 3 points today that have to do with whether or not you can know when money is your master. When money is your master, number one, you will be consumed with getting more of it. That's how you can know. You're consumed with getting more of it. It says that in verse 6. It contrasts contentment with the consuming nature of money. It says, this is what we should be. But godliness with contentment is great gain. For we brought nothing into the world. We cannot take anything out of the world. If we have food and clothing, we will be content. Paul often talked about this idea of contentment and how that's the pursuit of knowing that God's in control, God's the master of everything. He's given us everything to steward for his glory. And so when we're stewarding these things, we know that God promises he's going to provide us exactly what we need when we need it, which means if he hasn't given us what we desire to have, that means we don't need it. Or it means that one day we're going to need it, we just don't need it yet. And so part of this life we live where we don't have the things that we want when we think we need him is learning to trust that God's in control, he's sovereign. If he really wanted, he would provide a way to have them. And if he hasn't yet, then you just wait patiently. Or he may never bring those things. And you learn to be content with what things he has provided. Learn to be grateful for the grace that he bestows on us every day. That's the Christian pursuit. That's what true Christians are all about. Contentment, not envying the things that others have, right? So contentment is a goal that the Bible talks about we should always have. So when it begins to contrast here, the love of money is saying, look, the opposite of contentment is this. And it goes on to say in verse 9, but those who desire to be rich fall in temptation into a snare. It's a temptation and a trap to desire to be rich. All right? Be careful, little kids. I've been in your lives, and a lot of you say, man, one day I just really want to be rich, Daddy. And I always say this, like, be careful. Be careful, little kids. That's a trap. That's a temptation, it says in the Bible. Those who desire to be rich, man, it's going to lead to a lot of crazy things that you don't anticipate. You guys ever remember the show DuckTales? Anybody ever watch that? It's a newer show now. They're like, they rebooted it. But back in the day, in the 80s and the 90s, that show was awesome. I loved it. But I think back about it, there's a guy named Scrooge McDuck. And Scrooge McDuck is rich. And he has this big pile of money. He actually has a whole, it's like a huge bin of it, like a storehouse full of it. And he would go and he would get on his diving board and jump into the money, like his gold, and he would like swim around, which is not possible. We know, like, you can't swim in money. It's too heavy to do that. But he would swim in it, and he would just swim around, and he just loved it. Every day he would take a dip in his money and enjoy it and just kind of like just love that he has more than everybody else. But so many of the episodes were devoted to somebody trying to get his money, right, and take it from him, or for him trying to find new ways to acquire more. And it was always this test for him to like keep people away from it. Like, people were always trying to get it. He was always worried about it. He was always scared that somebody was going to take it. Or he was like, you know, I need more. And the whole like season long, it would just go on and on and on. And he would like somehow get more money or protect his money. And I just kind of think back to like what that was teaching me as a little kid now when I think about it. Like, maybe that wasn't such a good show to watch because I feel the same temptations to do what he does with my little bit of money. I don't have a storehouse of money like he did. But yeah, like society bombards us with this idea, like, it's never enough. And you saw that. He would have, Scrooge McDuck would have this lust in his eyes for the money. And it was just like a love relationship that he just, man, I gotta have more of this. I gotta have more of this. Psalms 62:10 talks about this. Beware, if riches increase, don't set your heart on them. Don't set your heart on them. That may happen, but don't set your heart and your trust and your affections on it. Be careful. Proverbs 23:4-5 says, do not toil to acquire wealth. Be discerning enough to desist. When your eyes light on it, it's gone, for suddenly it sprouts wings, flying like an eagle towards the heavens. Right? So, like, hey, be discerning. You may want to toil to acquire wealth. That may be your goal and aim in life. That may be your heart, but be discerning. Desist from that desire. Don't make that your object in life. Don't make that your mission. Don't make that your purpose, because it's fleeting. Okay? You get your eyes on it for a second, it seems like you're about to have it, and it says suddenly it sprouts rings. Flies away like an eagle towards heaven. Like just when you think you've got it, it'll leave. And you guys know that. Man, like, you've been saving for a long time and you've been saving up and you got your savings going, and then like, what happens? You're ready to go on that vacation, and then the washer and dryer break down, right? Vacation no more. You know, like, time to get a washer and dryer. Car breaks down. You know, economy crashes. Think you're going to sell your house for a big profit. Housing market, bam. You know, like there's just all of these things that if we set our heart and minds on acquiring wealth, it'll always let us down. It'll be fleeting. Man, like, generations, we've talked about this, generations of wealth was destroyed in 2020 because of the crazy decisions that our governments made, right? But also God was in control, and he allowed that to happen to reveal what we were putting our trust in. So many people were putting their trust in their 401k, gone. What now? Depression this year, more than ever, committing suicide, all of these things because people have set their heart on wealth and pursued it at all costs, when that business that they labored and they dreamed about that would bring them what they desired failed them in 2020 and they had to go out of business, their purpose was shot. It was like, man, like what happened? What was my life about? So many people had to reevaluate. It sprouted wings and it flew away, right? Like we get that, we get that. It'll be a consuming thing that will never be quenched. This desire for wealth, if you set your heart on it, it'll never be quenched. It'll never be enough. And you know that. You know that. The moment that you've got the thing that you wanted most and you've been looking forward to having it, you know, the moment you get it, what do you think? You don't think, this is awesome. I got this. I'm so grateful. I'm content now. This is the answer. You're like, okay, cool. I'm glad I got that. What's the next thing? Right? Like you're moving on. Quickly, that's my life, that's your life, that's all of our life, because that's the love of things, and that's what it will do. It will consume us. We want more of it constantly. So when money is your master, you will be consumed with getting more of it. Number two, when money is your master, you will do almost anything to accumulate more of it. All right, so it's not just that you want it, you're going to be willing to do what it takes to get it. Because you want more. It says that in verse 9. Those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. Right? It says senseless and harmful desires. That's the snare. Right? You love it so much that you're going to do crazy things you never thought you would have done to get it. And then it goes on to say this in verse 10, for the love of money is the root of all kinds of evil. Get the picture? All right, so love of money is like a little plant, and you've got these roots in the ground. That's the love of money, and it leads, as it grows, into all kinds of evil. The love of money is the seed that grows and grows and grows, and the more it grows and the roots grow deep, what happens? The fruition, evil. All kinds. All of it. All evil can flow from this, right? First Timothy 6 at the beginning talks about these false teachers. I want to head back to that because you're going to see the kind of evil that sprouts up. But it's not just true. When we read this, it's not just true of false teachers. This is true of life if you really apply it to everything. It says in verse 2, teach and urge these things. If anyone teaches a different doctrine, does not agree with the sound words of the Lord Jesus and the teaching that accords with godliness, only teach what's godly. He is puffed up with conceit and understands nothing. Okay? Here's the doctrine that we should teach. All right, so don't be prideful. Don't be puffed up with conceit. Or it's going to lead to this. An unhealthy craving for controversy. Right? People arguing all the time. It says for quarrels about words. People fighting, enmity. Right? Controversy all the time, everywhere it sprouts. It will produce envy. Okay? So I don't have something I want. I want it. Right? We see that in society right now, all over the place. I don't have what that person has. We got to figure out a way for me to get it. That's injustice to the world. Envy, dissension, right? A craving for controversy, slander, all right? Reproach for others, slander, taking people down, defaming people in their name, speaking evil, evil suspicions, constant friction among people who are depraved in mind, depraved in truth. Sound familiar? That's what's happening. It's in our world right now. Right? And listen to all of it. The bottom of it for this false teacher is this: imagining that godliness is a means of financial gain. That's his motive in all of it. His deep down motive, the false teacher, is to get gain for himself and to teach others that godliness, being godly, is a means to having financial wealth. That's the goal. It's not God's glory, it's gain for you here and now on this earth, right? And it leads to all these things: conceit, pride, slandering other people, dissension, all the evil things we see, constant friction, fighting, people who are depraved in mind, right? They don't have a mind that's set on the things above. They have the mind set on the things of this world. All of these things. That's the false teaching of the world. And that it's not just in the church. We have false teachers all over this planet that wherever they go, they're teaching that goodness is a mean to financial gain, and that at the bottom of it, that's their goal, to acquire as much as possible, and they believe that everybody should be about that same thing because that's what they're about, right? It leads to all this crazy stuff that should never happen. That's why, side note, that's the danger of the prosperity gospel. That's the danger. The danger of the prosperity gospel, it teaches that being godly will lead to financial gain on this planet right here and now, every time. Now, we know the Bible talks about it, that if you are godly, he will bless you sometimes if he sees fit on this planet, but it's not a promise. It's also a promise that you'll lose and you will face persecution and you won't have, and that wealth is just a circumstance that God takes us through and that he brings us in and out of in order to display his glory and to be a trial for us to test our faith and whether or not we're stable in God for real. Like, do we love the giver, not just the gifts, right? So we know that, but the prosperity gospel teaches that if you have true faith, you'll know because you'll be rich and you'll be healthy. And if you're not in faith, you'll know because you're sick and you don't have much and that you need to sow an uncommon seed of faith. That's where you give a bunch of money, trusting that when you give that money, God's going to see it as holy, and then he's going to just give you a bunch of money. As a result, you're going to be rich forever on this planet. And like, walking in faith is equated with riches, right? And that's the scary thing about the prosperity gospel. It takes something that's kind of true and twists it. But their means and their bottom of what they're trying to do is they're trying to seek gain for themselves and become rich. And that's why these guys are flying the jets and, you know, believing in God for their third jet and, you know, things like that. Like, and it's just scary. We got to stay away from it. Nobody should teach. These are not sound words. It says the false teachers, avoid them. Another place in 1 Timothy says, let them be accursed. You know, those who teach the false doctrine. Okay, that's the danger. But there's so many other places in the Bible that talks about generally this idea of those who pursue wealth. James 5, 1 through 6 says, now listen, you rich people, weep and wail because of the misery that's coming on you. That's like not light words, right? I'm reading this. Your wealth has rotted and moths have eaten your clothes. Your gold and silver are corroded. Their corrosion will testify against you and eat your flesh like fire. You have hoarded wealth in the last days. Look, the wages you failed to pay, the workers who mowed your fields are crying out against you. The cries of the harvesters have reached the ears of the Lord Almighty. You have lived on the earth in luxury and self-indulgence. You have fattened yourselves in the day of slaughter. You have condemned and murdered the innocent one who was not opposing you. Like, listen to what the wealth led him to do. Defraud the wages of people that worked under them. You know, you've heard stories all the time. I've experienced this even recently of just, you know, you work hard for your wages, you do what you committed to do, and the owner who's rich finds some way not to pay you your wages. What he agreed to? Like, they just find a way for whatever reason. It happened all the time. With me growing up, I've heard a lot of people, same thing. It'll lead you to steal from people because you want to acquire wealth. Condemned and murdered, it'll lead to murder. I mean, all the things that the Bible talks about in the Ten Commandments, so many of them have to do with this idea of the love of money and the master of money. Listen to this. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not lie. You shall never want what belongs to others. All of those commands, when you think about it, are things that are broken when people really, really want what others have, when they love others' wealth, right? It leads to murder. Committing adultery, that happens often when people are trying to obtain an inheritance, you know? the young woman or the young man will get with the older person and get them to commit adultery with their spouse. Then they'll get a divorce, and then that younger person will end up getting the inheritance. That happens all the time. You read it in the tabloids and in the news. Their whole goal was to get money and acquire wealth. You shall not steal. People constantly stealing. Man, how many times do you get scammed or people try to scam you on the internet? By the way, if anybody ever emails you, this happened recently, emails you and pretends to be me, it's happened to somebody in our church, pretends to be me and says, hey, I need you to give me money really quick. I need help and you need to do it through a money order or something like that. Guys, like I will never do that, okay? I had a couple of people, because somebody scammed my email, they got my mailing list and they figured I was a pastor and they emailed a couple of you and they were trying to basically get you to think that I needed money real quick and they thought you might help me and then they were gonna steal your money, okay? Like, I'll never do that, okay? I'll call you if I need money and hopefully I won't need money. I won't write you a weird email that sounds like a foreign person, you know? I won't do that. Steal, you lie, right? Lie, how many times? Get these calls where people are saying, hey, you owe money to the government, IRS. If you pay right now, the government won't come and arrest you. Here, give us your credit card number. Like, has that happened to you? It happened to me. AT&T DirecTV is calling right now. By the way, they are no longer a conglomeration, so they aren't affiliated with one another. So if AT&T DirecTV is calling you, which they leave me voicemails every day from a different number after I block their new one, and they say, hey, we can lower your rate. Just give us your credit card number. They're scamming you, okay? They're lying to you because they want to acquire wealth from people for doing nothing, okay? You get what I'm saying? We get it. Like, we face this stuff. It's not just the things that you do to obtain money, though. It's also the things that you neglect to do in order to obtain it. And for Christians, this is a big one. A lot of you guys are like, yeah, I'm not going to murder. I'm not going to lie. I'm not going to steal just to get money. I'm just going to work hard and put my head down and do it. But this is the thing. We got to be careful, because if God is if money is our God, then we'll actually neglect to do the things that God tells us to do and put acquiring money first. And that will reveal what our true love is. So many people miss the gathering of believers consistently because of work. Because they're working. There's all these jobs available that they could go do to not have to miss the gathering of believers, but they neglect to meet, and they make it a habit of neglecting to meet because deep down, they love money more than they love being obedient to what God's been really clear about that we need to do. Think about that. The neglect. Doing the very thing. You don't do the Great Commission because you don't have time to spend meeting with people or connecting. I mean, like, heck, you don't even have time to make relationships with new people because you're busy working so much to what? Acquire wealth, to acquire money so that you can pay for the things that, a lot of which, maybe you don't need, you know, maybe be just arbitrary commitments that you made that now you're enslaved to, you can't get out of, you're in credit card debt, you know, all these kind of things. But you don't have gospel relationship. You don't have time for discipleship relationship. You don't have time to serve the bride of Christ, right? College students will often neglect being an integral part of the church for 4 or 5 years because what? Their number one priority is school, right? Well, what's the end of the school? What's at the bottom of that? To get a degree, to what? To have a job and a career, to what? Acquire wealth so that they don't have to worry about it, right? Like all of those things. Is it bad to do those things? No, it's only bad when you pit God as your Lord and Master against the desire for money, right? Like when those things collide, and how do you know? You'll either do things that you're not supposed to do to get it, or you'll neglect things that you're supposed to do in order to get it, right? That's how you know that God's become your, I mean, that money's become your God. It's become your master. So when money is your master, you'll be consumed with getting more of it. And number two, you would do almost anything to accumulate more of it. I remember last story before we moved to the third point. I remember when I was a little kid, like this whole thing sets in even when you're a little kid. I remember there was like this little boy named Jake that was our neighbor in Florida. And I think in Sanford or somewhere like that. And I remember that. And we always collect baseball cards and basketball cards and stuff like that. And I would have them all. And he had really good cards that I wanted. And I had really lame cards that were not that great. I had some good cards too. But he would come. He didn't know any better. I was a little bit older. I knew all about the best players. And he'd be like, hey, let's trade. And so we would trade. Actually, it was my idea. Let's trade. And I would tell him, like, hey, look, this card, man, it's worth like $10. This is an awesome player. I play with him all the time on Tecmo Bowl. You know, like he's a great player. He's big time. It's worth $10. I was just making up prices. You know, I didn't look at a Beckett price guide or anything. I was like, $10. This one's 20. You know, this one's 5. And I'm like, hey, I'll trade you all of these for the, like, you know, the Bo Jackson card. He was big time back then. You know, or Emmitt Smith, or yeah, these football players I really like, basketball players. And so all of a sudden he was giving me all his good ones and I was ditching all the ones that weren't worth any. And then his parents finally came over to our house and they had realized what had happened and they had to talk with mom and dad. And I had been ripping this dude off. and I just thought, well, I mean, they have to be a lot. Like they're pretty good on Tecmo Bowl. I was just making stuff up. I didn't know the truth. And I had got all the good cards that I had. But Tim learned from me, and he actually, we had comic books, and Tim made money off comic books at school. He never told them they were worth anything. He would just bring them and say, look how awesome this is, you know? And they were like, I want that. Okay, $8, you know? And we got them for like 50 cents, you know, at the comic book warehouse, and he was like awesome. Like he didn't lie to anybody. He was just like, yeah, if you give me $8, I'll give it to you. And he got rich at school. It was pretty awesome. And he didn't have to do it lying. So you'll do almost anything to accumulate more of it. But number three, and lastly, the big one is you will lose God in your desire for it. In your desire for money, you're going to lose God, right? It says that in verse 9 at the end of it. But those who desire to be rich fall into temptation, into a snare, into many senseless and harmful desires that plunge people into ruin and destruction. Right, it starts with a here and now. Man, you look around at somebody who's really pursued wealth at all costs, and you look and you'll see broken relationships laying in the wake. You'll see broken marriages, families that hate that father, hate that mother that pursued that stuff. You'll see whole families that were just torn apart because the inheritance didn't go the way that they wanted it to go, right? Like their parents died, and when their parents died, all the brothers and sisters fighting, destroying one another, destruction, ruin, saying horrible things they can't take back because they they thought it should go one way and it didn't, you know. Man, just on and on. You'll see businesses that have gone under because other businesses destroyed them on social media, and destruction everywhere, ruin. And it happened here and now, right? And earthly problems, all of those things that we see, it happens. But also, there's eternal problems. 1 Timothy 6:10 goes on to say, for the love of money, it's the root of all kinds of evil, and it's through this craving, or get it, like this craving, this unquenchable desire that you have, that some have wandered from the faith and pierced themselves with many pangs. All right, and this is the fruition, verse 10 of the beginning, where he's talking about these false teachers who actually heard about the gospel of Jesus, and they twisted it so that they could have financial gain. So like they heard the truth of the gospel and they're leading people astray, right? They've wandered from the faith, and people are hearing these false teachers and saying, oh, that's what God wants me to have? That's what he's about? Cool, I want that. That sounds great. That sounds like everything that I used to want before Christ. Man, I could have all of that too. And they just wandered away from the faith. It says, and pierced themselves with many pangs. It's like, that's a crazy, crazy analogy there. Being pierced with pangs, all right? Harmful things happen to people. It says they've wandered away from the faith. And you see that all throughout the Gospels with different people. Judas Iscariot, prime example, right? What showed that he betrayed Jesus? How did he do it? By getting some silver, right? He got money and turned in our Lord and Savior, told him where he was, sent him off to be killed for the faith, for money, right? Luke 16, 14 through 15, Jesus called out the Pharisees who were all about this. It says, the Pharisees who were lovers of money heard these things that Jesus was saying. They ridiculed him, and he said to them, you are those who justify yourselves before men, but God knows your hearts, for what is exalted among men is an abomination in the sight of God. He was looking at these guys who heard how he was talking about money, and they were ridiculing him. And he knew, hey, in your heart of hearts, you don't love God, you love money. You love stuff, right? And you exalt things on this earth because you love stuff. Right? But just know that's an abomination in God's sight. He hates that. He despises and detests that. Abomination, that's a terrible word, inside of God. Whoever's exalted among men, if you're exalted here and now, God hates it. That's not our pursuit. That should never be what we desire and pursue. Mark 4:19 says this. When it talks about the parable of the sower, so the sower sows a seed, right? And there's all these results from it, okay? Well, some come in, the thorns, and they choke out the seed so that it can't grow into a plant. And it says this, but the worries of this life, the deceitfulness of wealth, and desires for other things come in and choke out the word and make it unfruitful. So many people hear the gospel, And they hear it, and they hear the truth of following Jesus and making him Lord, not stuff and not money and not the love of this world. And then what it says is the thorns come in and choke that seed. You never hear from again. But at first they kind of look like they're getting it. It looks like it's taken. There's a lot of people that you see in the faith that come in and they hear about Jesus, and then you talk to them, and I always tell them, hey, trial's coming. It's coming. The thorns are going to kind of trying to come in. Everything that you used to love, all of the people that used to be about your mission, now that your mission's changed, they're going to come in and they're going to say, hey, that's crazy. That's crazy talk. Don't believe that stuff. What are you doing? What do you mean you're posting Bible verses on your social media? What in the world? What's wrong with you, bro? I'm not going to be your friend anymore if you don't do. And you know, the love of people's perception, you know, also having to give up the love of things and, you know, give to God's kingdom instead of keeping and acquiring. All this, come in, it's going to choke you out. It's going to choke you out. And those people, what it says is they're choked out and they're never heard from again. And they turn away. They wander from the faith. They didn't really truly ever believe because it didn't take root. And the trials were a means to expose that. Proverbs 11:28, he who trusts in his riches will fall, but the righteous shall flourish as the green leaf. 1 John 2:15-17, do not love the world nor the things in the world. If anyone loves the world, the love of the Father, this is clear, is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh and the lust of the eyes and the boastful pride of life is not from the Father, but is from the world. The world is passing away and also its lust, but the one who does the will of God lives forever. So it's contrasting there, saying, hey, look, do you love the things of the world? You love it? You love the pride of life? You lusting after the things that everybody else has, the lust of the flesh and the lust of stuff? This is not the love of the Father. It literally says, the love of the Father is in you. Who's your master? Right? Who's your master? Your master is stuff. Your master is money, if that's what you're characterized by. You can't love both, right? They're at enmity with one another. You got to pick one or the other. And Romans 8:28 says, and we know that all things work for the good of those who love him, for the good of those who love him and have been called according to his purpose. Okay, that's so true. And we're going to talk about that next week. It's going to be really cool to hear about what it means to be a really good steward of the actual master of God. That's going to be the message next week and all that entails. But look, all things work together for the good of those who love him. All things work for the bad for those who don't. All things. It will all fail. It will all fade away. It won't last. And ultimately, we talked about this in the first message, the intro message. Our love of money will reveal our eternal destination one day. And Jesus says that all the time. Think about this. The rich young ruler we talked about last week, he put his love in his money. Jesus knew that he loved his money so much and he trusted his money. He said, hey, like, just go give your money away. Trust in me. That's your most valuable possession. Rich young ruler, what did he say? He chose his money. What he ultimately chose was hell and separation from God, because that was what was next. Right? The sheep and the goats, if you read that parable, you've got all these goats that say, Lord, Lord, didn't we do these things for you? And God says, did you give what I stewarded you away for the gospel and to people who had need? Did you do those things? If you did, you loved me. If you didn't, you didn't love me. If you didn't, you're a goat, which means you're not one of my sheep, which means what? Right? Harsh stuff. Like, depart from me. He separates them and sends them off to their eternal destruction. The way that they steward their money revealed where their heart truly was aligned, who their allegiance was with, and then at the end times, the judge will stand there and he'll just say, you'll lay it all bare and you'll know and you won't be able to argue, right? And so that's why it's so important for us to get it right here and now as Christians, to be about the things that God's called us to be about. And I'm encouraged, because when I look around at this room, there's so many of you guys that, man, have given up so much to come down here and be a part of this mission. You know, you're like, you could have lived anywhere, but you bought a home and Montevallo, right? Like there's better places you could have lived. It's not a bad place, but you know, there's better houses you could have had, and there's communities you could have lived in that had more Walmarts and shopping facilities and you know, entertainment options and restaurants to go to, and like there's a lot of places. So like it's encouraging to look around and see how you guys are giving to one another, how we're bringing people into our homes and using our homes as a means to connect with people. I was really encouraged to hear about the ladies the other day who got together at Megan's house and I think it was your house, or did y'all go out? Yeah, got together at your house, and Megan had connected with people in the neighborhood, and she wanted them to meet church people. Really cool. And then you guys, you ladies, were part of that. Pretty awesome that you're using your unrighteous wealth to make friends that one day may welcome us. You may welcome us into our eternal dwelling place, as it talks about in Luke 16. So let's just keep going. Let's keep getting after it. But at the same time, we need to recognize these ways in which money is creeping in and becoming the master, right? And run from those things. Run from it. Run to God. Have accountability in your life. And that's why we're here as a church together, to make these things plain and then hold each other accountable to say, hey, like, what's it look like? Let's grow. Let's run. This is an area. Come on. Lay it bare. Shine the light on it. And hopefully we'll do that together. So when money is your master, you'll be consumed with getting more of it. You'll do almost anything to accumulate more of it. And you will lose God and your desire for it. Pretty scary warnings. But there's so many cool things promised for those of us who run from money as our master and really seek after God. And we're going to hear that next week.
We are so encouraged that you chose to engage with God's Word on our Providence podcast. For more biblical teaching, resources, media, and to financially support the mission of Providence, please visit providencechurch.com. Until next time, go equip one another to embody humanity's one true purpose.